Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, yeah! Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. How do we like our martial arts? We like them mixed!
Oh, you gotta love it. What is up, my friends? Hello there. You're all out there just having a wonderful day. The sun is shining. The birds are singing, and Doc Rivers isn't the new Phoenix Suns head coach. The Friday vibes are just immaculate. I love it. My name is Sean Oshadi, and this is the UFC Vegas 74 preview show here on MMA Fighting. We appreciate y'all for joining us. That's it, today's crew. You already know, we have the Prince of Positivity. He's the king of the North. He is the last holdout for the Ultimate Fighter, and he's just having a great week because everyone's scurrying back to his side on that. He is Alexander K. Lee, and of course, the Legal Eagle. Mouth from the South. My guy, Jed Meshew, also joining us.
I like Mouth from the South. I like that one. We can do that one.
It came to me and it felt right. It felt right. Also, of course, you already know. You already heard him. The best producer in the business with the best intro in the business. He is the undefeated A. Casey Layton, man in the boards. So let's dig into it, fellas. UFC Vegas 74. We are right back at the apex. 13 fights. Kaikara France, Amir Abazi at the top. And AK, I'm going to just throw this to you because this is your wheelhouse. You are known to rate a card or two. You are known to throw up a poll or two. I need both from you right now. What are we looking at?
The poll is out. I'll say what the poll is actually after I give my opinion first. I'm grading the card on paper. I mean, listen, if Mick Maynard's out there, they haven't put on a bad show in years. So, I got to be careful what I say here. This company just 44 to 46 cards a year and just always delivering banger after banger after banger. Doesn't matter. UFC Apex, pay-per-view, UFC Topeka. It doesn't matter where they are. They're always delivering. So, but I actually do kind of like this card. It certainly has taken a few late hits. We're going to see some debutants that we did not expect to see, and maybe there'll be pleasant surprises. So I'm just going to go a 8.0 degree of difficulty for UFC Vegas 74. 8.0. I think I like that there's some veterans on there. I actually think there's a lot of potential for finishes. And if that's how people gauge what an entertaining card is, which again, I don't always think that's the be all end all, but if people are looking for finishes, I think they'll be satisfied there. And banger of a main event. So there you go. That takes it up to an 8.0 easily.
8.0. So 80%, that's a nice B minus. You like to see
it. Remember, and this means it can only be an 8.0 out of 8.0. Remember, this is the scale. It can only reach an 8. The scale is now out of 8. Yeah. So, and I just threw up a poll asking people, how do they grade this card on paper? And so far, C leading the way, 48%.
All right. Jed, you had a really great stat earlier this week about the flyweights. And sort of their position within this company and maybe the opportunity that we are seeing for the first time in a long time. So could you go ahead and repeat that for us? It's almost like history in the making here this weekend in a weird way. Not really, but kind of.
This is the first non-title flyweight main event since August 5th of 2017. Also, Shaheen, way to not give me any notice that you were going to ask me that. Fortunately, I did have that pulled up in front. So I was about to be like, oh, I know where I can find that. So got it. August 5th, 2017. That is, we talked about a no bets board. I should have done an even more extensive list. Do you know the number of things that have happened in that amount of time? Shaheen, you had a child, by the way.
That's true.
You had a child before the last time. Your child could be
I've
in the first
married
grade
and had it a week child. After.
Got married and had a child. Two World Cups. You know what had happened just like 2-3 months prior at the last time flyweight's main evented in a non-title fight? Patrick Mahomes had just gotten drafted to the Kansas City Chiefs. It was a lifetime ago. I'm trying to think who was like the heavy. I think Daniel Cormier might have still been light heavyweight champion the last time flyweights headlined in a non-title capacity. Like,
give me the date again.
August 5th, 2017. I really think that's Daniel Cormier is still the light heavyweight champion there. But I'm going to look this up.
I want to know what
Georgia,
Jim Miller.
Georgia Sports had not won a championship
ever.
The Braves in the 90s at that point.
Yeah,
I want to know
we were in the deep darks then.
August 2017, Andrei Arlovsky was on a 5-fight losing streak. By the way, this is
Which one? He's had 3 of them.
He was on his. I mean, the most recent one. He didn't have. Hey, listen. The other one was 3 fights in a no contest. This is he had lost to Stipe, Overeem, Barnett, Ngannou, and Marcin Tybura before the last flyweight main non-title flyweight main event. Jim Miller. I'm trying to get my dates right here. Jim Miller had just fought Dustin Poirier and Anthony Pettis and just lost to them. So that's where they were. Two gentlemen who are on this card. That's where they were the last time there was a flyweight, non-title flyweight main event.
Atlanta United, speaking of Atlanta sports teams, had just been founded, Shaheen.
That's a soccer team, right?
It's our MLS team who were the first Atlanta team to win a championship. They did it in 2018.
They broke the curse.
They broke the seal, and then Georgia football may never lose again. So it's pretty cool.
Hard to argue with that. I mean, let's dive into this a second because we're going to talk about the fight plenty. But like, that's a pretty incredible stat, right? 6 years, basically. Why do you think this is? Like, why is that something that is a reality in our world in 2023 in the UFC, where we have cards seemingly every week that are, you know, not great? A lot of really mediocre main events. Why did it take this long for the flyweights to actually get their shine?
Because Dana White hates them. That's the only really plausible answer to me. I mean, he did actively try to kill this division out of spite for Demetrius Johnson, and not even like good spite. DJ didn't even wrong him. He just like didn't totally put up with the UFC nonsense. And Dana was like, I'm going to trade you and I'm going to burn this division to the ground. It's just because they're small, because the little guys, and like AK, they're not here for the short kings apparently. And so that's just what happened, I guess. I don't know. Ask AK as a short king hater. AK is probably in a better position to explain the UFC's thought process here.
I'll be realistic. I mean, you know, the flyweights, at least when early on, they didn't draw. They weren't giving a lot of opportunities to, and I hated that the UFC just seemed to sort of like accept that they were just like, oh well, this is our new division and they're smaller guys and they're not heavyweights. The finishing rate wasn't what it was. I'm pretty sure. I think like people are like, oh, flyweights never finish fights. And it's like, now that's certainly not the case. I mean, now we have flyweight unders. It swept the nation. If people think flyweights don't finish fights anymore, I don't know what version of the mixed martial arts you're watching, but flyweights finish as much as anybody and often quite quickly, as quickly as the name would suggest. So, it's just this weird mentality. Look how they organize their cards. They've always had it. And you know, this might be a boxing thing too, but they've always had it. Let's say there's two title fights, you know, it doesn't matter who the bigger star is, unless we're talking about McGregor. But usually it's like, no matter what, the heavier weight goes up top, then the co-main event will be the lighter weight title fight. And it's just silly. It's like, why does it have to be so simple? Like, I think we're pretty beyond, I like to think we're beyond where like heavyweights are the absolute kings of combat sports. Cause that's nearly not, listen, we're in the post Pacquiao, post Mayweather, Oscar De La Hoya, just name so many. I mean, go back Sugar Ray Leonard. Like, there's so many great stars who were not heavyweights, but UFC is just, and maybe MMA in general, has just pushed for so long that heavyweights are reliable people to put in the main event. They're going to get you a finish, which again, we've seen a lot of times has not happened. We've seen some pretty ugly heavyweight fights in recent years, more so than flyweights, certainly more so than flyweights, I would say. So it's just a perception thing. It's a perception thing that I think there's inherent bias that, you know, maybe needs to be overcome. And I think the UFC gave up a long time ago on trying to overcome that bias, because again, they don't have to, right? As we know, the UFC doesn't have to try any harder than they already are, and they're making money over hand over fist. So the flyweights are the kind of the victims of that.
Throwing the heavyweights under the bus there. You're telling me you wouldn't rather see Sergey Spivak in a main event than Kai Kara France? You're crazy. You're crazy.
Come on. Okay. How is Andre Arlovski, Dontell Mays not in the main card? What's going on here? That's not in the ring. It's ridiculous.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Former UFC heavyweight champion Andre Arlovski. You say his full name, sir.
Correct.
The man that Jed Meshew once wrote a 1,000-word feature arguing for as the GOAT, the heavyweight GOAT of all time. We'll get into all of this. But first, let's start
spot
with
spot the
event.
Lie.
It was a convincing case. So of AK, of these, I would say right now there's three newer faces in this 125-pound division who have sort of made their way into contention. And, you know, this division is quickly reloading, but these three are the three that really stick out to me. Is Makhachev, Kopp, and Albazi. Where do you think Albazi ranks in terms of highest ceiling amongst sort of that trio that we have coming up the ranks right now to maybe displace the guys that have been here for a bit?
Great question. I think if we're talking ceiling, I still, even though I get it, Makhachev, we've had a bit of a reality check with him, like still super talented guy, obviously one of the best wrestlers in flyweight, that's going to take you a long way. You know, we haven't quite got, that last fight was pretty touch and go. He got hugely challenged. And for me, that's both a good and a bad thing. Like, you want to see a prospect like him get challenged. At the same time, did he get exposed? I hate this word, but did he get exposed in some ways? So, but Makhachev, I'm still putting him at the top, still a believer he's going to be a future flyweight champion. I never really bought into like the two division thing. Everyone's like, oh, he could win in two divisions. And that may happen, but I still see him as a flyweight champion. I don't know about another weight class. So Makhachev is up there. And I'll put Albazi firmly second. Like, I think Albazi, people know I haven't been like super on the cap train. He's unquestionably maybe one of the five most exciting flyweights, which is a huge compliment when considering what we said, like flyweight is like one of the best divisions I think to watch. So Kopp is certainly exciting. I think there's just some inconsistencies. I think his style isn't always conducive to necessarily contending, because I don't know how he is at like a lot. At some point you're gonna have to win like hard fought decisions, and he's kind of like, he wants to always get that perfect shot, get that knockout. I'm talking about Kopp, and it's not always going to be there. So Albazi for me is like kind of right in that sweet spot of a guy who certainly, of course, can finish fights, you know, very well-rounded. But also I know I have a lot of confidence he can grind wins out too. But he is a finisher as well. I see him as someone who I think could win high-level decisions in the future. I don't quite have that faith in Kopp. So I go Makhachev, I go Albazi. Win or lose on Saturday, I go Albazi, and then I'll go Kopp third.
Hey, Shaheen, I can't hear you.
How about now?
Sure can.
Love my internet. It's so clutch. We pay for the most expensive internet Cox provides, and always, always comes through in the clutch for me.
Everyone loves
Jen,
Cox.
Would you agree with what AK just said there, that putting a mere second on that list? You look at what he's done sort of in the UFC so far, 4-0, three finishes, rolling through a lot of this opposition. Would you say he's second amongst that trio that we're talking about at 125, or you put him somewhere else?
Wait, who's the third name in the trio?
Kopp, Makhachev, and him.
Kopp, sorry. No, I think he's third. I think he's just third in the trio. But they're real close. He's probably proved the most insofar as he's on a really good run. I mean, one career loss. Kopp has shown some pretty clear weaknesses at points, even though I think his ceiling is arguably the highest. Mikhaev is just so very raw. He's so young. He's only 22 or whatever. But I think the ceilings on both Kopp and Mikhaev are higher than Albazi, but I think he's sort of a little further along the road, and this is his opportunity, right? Like he comes out here and he shows out against former interim title challenger. Well, frankly, if he wins this fight, he is probably just next in line for the winner of the upcoming flyweight championship. And that sucks for Brandon Royval, but I think that might be more sellable. So I think he's further along, but I don't like his chances this weekend. We'll get into that later. And mostly I think he just has a lower ceiling than some of the other up-and-coming dudes in this weight class.
That's interesting. I'm surprised to hear you put him third, although I guess, I mean, Kopp is obviously, there's a lot of potential in Kopp, but I feel like I agree with AK in this one.
Kopp's
like
fun, man. Second for me.
Kopp is fun. Kopp is just pure
Kopp's
fun.
Kopp's way more fun. If you're going to ask me to
this
pick
thing, right?
No, I'm going to pick the fun guy 9 times out of 10, unless like it's very clear. Unless somebody's very clearly a good fun police, and Amir Albazi is not that. Give me the fun dude anytime.
Well, you look on the other side of this. I mean, Kai Kara of France, he's the A side, right? He's in a weird place in this division. I feel like he's almost become somewhat of a forgotten figure here at 125 because he's A, been away for so long, but also just the way that the last one played out, right? Like the man was 10 minutes away from beating Brandon Moreno. He was winning that fight before that wicked body kick at I think 277. Where do you feel like Kai Kara of France sort of fits in this division right now? Do you feel like he's almost being slept on because of that last performance, Jim?
No, because I don't know where he fits in this division. He's a really interesting guy. Because if you look at his resume, I mean, he has a ton of losses, like, right? So let's just start there. This is not a guy who's an all-world talent, unbelievable fighter. He has just been steadily improving, getting better time in and time out. But there's a very real argument that he is simply on a good run right now, but that he has a clear limitation. If you look at his resume in the last few years, particularly his UFC run, he just lost to the best dudes he's fought. When he's fought the top tier guys, he just lost, and that's it. Like his wins are over Cody Garbrandt. That win does not mean what it, you know, maybe would have meant several years back. Askar Askarov is his best win, but also your mileage varies a little bit just because of who Askarov is as a fighter. And when he's fought, you know, Brandon Royval, Brandon Moreno, he's lost. Maybe it's just that though. Maybe he just can't beat guys named Brandon. And because Amir Albazi is not named Brandon, he's going to have a good weekend. But I don't really know how to rate him because it's hard for me to say if he's ascending, you know, if he's fit, put all the pieces together and he's got it going now, or if he just has some sort of natural limitations that are going to cap him from ever being an elite fighter. I could see either being the case, frankly. I could see like, oh, he's turned it over. It's just that Brandon Moreno is the best flyweight in the world, so he couldn't get it done. That's why I'm interested in this fight. I think this is a really good opportunity against a guy who's at the very least game in Albazi and who is good for KKF to kind of show me who he is in this landscape, in this weight class.
I wonder how easy it is to change your nickname with the UFC. Like, do you have to give them some sort of notice, like weeks or months notice? Because it would have been the ultimate troll if Albazi, he has a nickname, he's the Prince. But if just for this one night, he was like, I'm Amir Brandon Albazi. Like he went with Brandon just to mess with them, just to get in KKF's head. And then,
because he should have changed his name legally to Brandon.
Oh, just legally. I think that's a lot more paperwork. That's probably harder.
It's like $50 in paperwork. Commit.
How much time
do you want to be a champion or not?
I would just have loved if who's going to be in there on Saturday? Joe Martinez,
Brandon Albazi,
Amir Albazi, and then you just see Kai Kara of France start twitching like, oh no, not again. That would have been great, but I think Amir has enough confidence in his own abilities that he doesn't need such gamesmanship.
Fun fact: almost named my son Amir. Very close. Very close.
And then was Brandon also
next on the list?
Yeah. Brandon was not on the list, unfortunately. Aww. Brandon wasn't on the list. Although, had I known this fun fact, he might have been in consideration, just in case he ever comes up against a guy named Kai Kara of France. It's interesting hearing your sort of walking through the evolution of Kai Kara of France, right, Jed? Because in my mind, there are a lot of parallels between Kai and the champ, Brandon Moreno, in that, AK, I mean, this is your wheelhouse, the Ultimate Fighter. Like, you're living large right now with the Ultimate Fighter. You look back at that 2016 season with the DJ season of all the champs. A lot of the top contenders right now at flyweight are literally still coming from that season, right? Like, Brandon Moreno was number 16 on that season. Kai Kara France was on that. He was number 9. Like, a lot of the lower-ranked guys from that season are now thriving, and we've seen them sort of grow and evolve and become who they are in the UFC. And that is always such a tough thing, right? Not coming to the UFC as a finished product, but coming to the UFC as such a young up-and-comer who is really still figuring themselves out and then working through that while fighting the best in the world. Where do you feel like Kai fits in this division? Do you agree with sort of where Jed put him?
I agree with the assessment that he is not, like, from a talent standpoint, he's not probably one of the five most talented guys at flyweight. I mean, you maybe not even 10. Again, this division, I see a lot of people in the comments calling out Tetsuro Taira. That kid is a hell of a talent and certainly needs to be part of the discussion. So I would put him, as far as just raw talent, I would put him above.
I would put Taira over too.
Yeah. But listen, he's a grinder, super hardworking guy, veteran. I mean, listen, this is like 30 something pro fights. You know, he's been in there, and he's only 30 years old, but he's pretty old in fight years. But I think in this sense, I think he's at that right level of experience and age. It's not come to the point where like his fight age is a detriment. I think he's like right. This is his prime. This is quite literally his prime. It is unfortunate that he just hasn't been able to get over the hump against some of the best of the best of the best guys. I do weigh the Askarov win pretty heavily. I thought that was his best performance. I thought it was great that they put him, that it got him that rematch with Moreno for the interim title. So I he's there, he's upper tier, but it doesn't surprise me that it does feel like he's lost in the shuffle. At the same time, I do think there's a path for him to someday get an actual undisputed title shot. It'll probably be down the road. Brandon Moreno will have to be out of the picture, I think. It's a lot to ask to give him a third fight with Brandon Moreno, barring like a string of first round KO. Like, he just runs to Abazi, runs to his next two opponents. Brandon Moreno needs an opponent. Maybe you have a chance there, but it's a hard trilogy to sell. Especially since we just saw Brandon Moreno fight the same guy 4 times. Now do you want to see him fight this other guy 3 times? And again, the division keeps getting, we just named a bunch of people who could leapfrog over Kai Kara France. Brandon might not have any shortage of challengers. So I love his chances of sticking around the UFC for a long time and being a top 10 guy for a long time. But a lot has to fall in the right place for KKF to get another title opportunity.
AK, earlier in this convo, Jed sort of snuck in there that he thinks this might be, that the winner of this may fight for a title in his next fight. Or at least that Albazi, it seemed like you indicated.
Yeah, if he not confident Kai Kara France fights for a title, but if Albazi, he's at least got a shot at it.
Do you agree with that, AK? Do you think that's up for grabs here?
Yeah, for Albazi, certainly. Like I said, Brandon Moreno, I'm really optimistic. He's the kind of guy, we'll see him log something like 5 title defenses over the next couple of years. Hopefully more. And listen, hopefully more. But I think if we got 5 Brandon Moreno title fights over the next 5 years, people would be pretty happy. And that's assuming, of course, that he even wins all those. Again, there is just so many great challengers coming up. I love the Pantoja fight. I've said that I feel like Brandon Royval could sneak in there. I've said that 2023 is his year, as you would put it. I wouldn't say it any other way. So I think Brandon Royval can sneak in there. But otherwise, again, I like Albazi's chances. Yeah, I like Albazi's chances of within the next year. I'll go even shorter, within the next year, 10 months, 8 months, finding a way. If it either has to be like a finish of Kai Kara France or a really convincing decision. If he just wins a decision, you know, one that we're like, okay, he clearly won, but it's, you know, there's just, it's lacking in highlights, it's lacking in pace, it's lacking, like, it's just not making a statement. You're just going to see Albazi highlighting Apex cards, until like next summer. But if he gets a finish, if it's like he gets a really strong 50-45, 49-46 win over a guy like Kai Kara France, then he's right up there. Then I think he's one fight. I don't think he gets a title fight, but one fight away.
For context, the UFC's rankings currently have Kai Kara France as number 3 behind Figgy, who unclear what exactly his future in this weight class is, and Pantoja, who's about to fight for the belt. So if he wins, probably going to move to number three. And I know it's not guaranteed if he wins like a back and forth decision, but my thought process here is, one, if he does get a big finish, yes, but even if he doesn't, if he just comes out and can be somewhat interesting or do the thing on the mic, he is the guy who won in a flyweight headliner the first in 6 years. He's on the longest win streak in the division. He'll be the number three guy and the one and two guys are fighting or whatever. So yeah, like Brandon Royval would make a lot of sense, and I'm not going to be mad if Brandon Royval gets it, but Brandon Royval has also lost to both dudes who are about to fight for the title fairly recently. So if he wins, I think he's got a shot at it. But do the thing, Amir Albazi. If you don't get knocked out, do the thing.
It's a cold, cold world if Brandon Royval gets skipped over. He campaigned to be the backup fighter. He's trying to do the thing that that apparently is what you do now to get this title shot, is be the backup fighter. And you're saying he could get skipped over, maybe.
It is a cold world, but he lost to both dudes in the title fight, like within the last 2 years. It's not that long ago. So like I'd love to watch him fight. It would be fun as hell, but there's a very good argument for him to not get it if Albazi gets this win.
So, Jed, earlier it seemed like you indicated that you don't particularly like Amir's chances here. Is that correct? Where are you going with this? How you break this down?
I'm going with Kaikar France. There's not like a ton of confidence in it because I'm a little unsure how good Kaikar France is. I'm choosing to believe that Kaikar France has leveled up. And the guy we've seen the last, you know, four or five times out, that's the guy who he is. He has sort of elevated his game to this place. And if the place is, I was very competitive with Brandon Moreno, who I believe is the best flyweight in the world, before, you know, ultimately getting finished. And prior to that, I've just been kind of pantsing everybody I've been facing. Then that's a really good place. And that's a level I've never seen Amir Albazi compete at. It's not to say he can't get there. Maybe he's out there and we just haven't seen him kind of get tested in that way because he's looked very good mostly. But I largely think Kaikar France is just going to be able to keep this on the feet. And Albazi is not as, you know, creative or as dangerous a striker. And so it's KKF all day for me.
What about you, AK? Where are you leaning?
I'm going the other way. I think when this matchup was first made, I definitely was thinking leaning towards Kaikar France. Now I'm going Albazi. I've liked a lot of what I've seen from him. I don't know if he'll be able to like consistently find ways to take the fight to the ground if that's his game plan. But I do think we could see like a back take on the feet. He could find ways working against in the clinch, working against the fence, kind of ways to slow Kaikar France down and stifle him. So I like that possibility. So I'm going with Albazi. I'm going with what I said. He needs to make a statement to really put himself in that title picture. And I'm going to say he's going to finish Kaikar France submission round late in round two. Flyweight under.
Wow. Early.
I'm going under. Got to do it.
You love to see it.
Under 2.5.
For me,
love to see it.
I just wonder if this is too much too soon for Amir Albazi. Because this is someone, like, you look at the four fights that he's had in the UFC. This is leaps and magnitudes of a jump for in terms of level of competition, right? Like who is the best guy he has fought so far in the UFC? Between the four, would you say?
Oh, I have to look at who he's. Zalgas Magulov. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zalgas.
Like the jump from him to KKF is massive in my mind. And that's a tough one. That's a tough bridge for me to cross. I think Albazi will get there at some point in his career. I'm very high on his potential, but this feels like a lot. This feels like a really big jump. And I just think KKF, this is the moment for him, right? Like he cannot lose two in a row and really drop down the vision that far if he wants to continue what he's trying to do. So I go out KKF as well. I think it'll be a decision, but I'm looking forward to this one, man. I'm glad the flyweights are finally getting some shine here.
It
took 6 years, but we're finally getting it going. So let's move on, fellas. There's not really a co-main event on this card. Alex Caceres versus Daniel Pineda. It's fine. I would say that's.
Would you say that's a penultimate fight?
Beat you to
definition
it.
Definition for sure.
No. So in that respect, Jen, I'll throw it to you. What's the second best fight on this card?
It's the fight that should be the co-main event. And I know you guys are going to say I'm insane.
Oh, Lord.
And don't do it. I don't really care.
Don't do it.
Dude, he's a former champion. Why are we just acting like Andrei Arlovski isn't a former heavyweight champion and one of the most accomplished fighters in the sport? Like, for the last, like, 4 years, we've just sort of left him here. And I know that the fights aren't fun. Like, I'm not here to tell you we're going to have a good time with it. But give this man his due and props.
It is. Like, it is bizarre.
Not that fun is, like, an understatement, though. Like,
disagree. Like, I have so much fun. And then there's just...
Does it have something to do with heavyweight overs, Jed?
Sure does. It's the best.
Not everyone is betting heavyweight overs. All right. They don't know the thrill.
You should be.
Okay. This is true.
It's the most electric bet in sports.
It is strange that the UFC and the matchmakers, schedule makers, I guess you'd say, that their heavyweight fetish does not extend to Andrei Arlovski. Like, this feels why would this not be on the main card? Like, I think I was kind of
half joking before, pointed. But. It is. Can you imagine any other UFC heavyweight champion just being this guy for years, buried in the prelims time?
Not even that. If this were like Parker Porter versus Dontell Mays, which again, an incredible matchup. I should have used another example.
Not slander Parker Porter.
Okay. If this were, I was going to say that a guy who Dontell Mays had already fought. Guys, give me, if this were Waldo Cortez Acosta versus Dontell Mays, this would be like the penultimate fight of the night. Like, this would be easily be in the main card. But for some reason, because it's Arlovski, like, he's the only heavyweight. They're like, nope, shove him down.
I don't know or even necessarily believe it's going to happen. He's 44. Literally at any point in time, it could be the last fight of his career. And he's just buried in the prelims. A future Hall of Famer. Like, I don't think there's any question this man gets in the Hall of Fame. A former heavyweight champion. And just, like, I'm not saying he needs to fight other people. Like, I think this is right. Like, we don't have to do the legends thing for him. He can just fight these guys, and that's okay. But just at least let the man be on the main card. That's all I'm saying. Also, AK, I'd like to preemptively throw out not no pick. I'd like Andrei Arlovski versus Parker Porter, win or lose tonight. Or tomorrow night.
Ooh. AA versus PP. I like it.
Now we're talking my language. I'm into that. Let's do that. Like, can we just do that instead of this?
No. Because I feel good about this one hitting the over. I really like my chances to cash that heavyweight over.
I can't believe the over is only what, like, +195 or plus. It should be like, or sorry, minus 195. It should be like -2000. Like, this is not, no one's getting finished in this fight.
It's the best. It's going to be almost the best. No way. I'm going to have so much fun. Just clinching, just two big dudes clinching against the fence for 12 minutes.
Really selling it. Can't wait for it. AK, second best fight of the card. What do you think?
Oh, that's not a good reaction.
That was a fun sound.
Listen, the card got a shot. I want to talk about Jim Miller. I mean, it would have been Jim Miller, Jared Gordon. We can talk about that more later. I know someone was asking about it in the chat earlier. Now Jesse Butler stepping in. So that I can't pick that fight. I'll go with, I'm afraid I'm going to say a fight that doesn't exist anymore. This card is so strange. You know what? I'm going to go with Jamie Malarkey and the otherwise, you know, unknown Muhammad Naimov. I admit I don't know a lot about Naimov. But Malarkey is just always a good time. I like that. I think it's the featured prelim. I need to find that proper bout order. I believe it is the featured prelim. Excellent choice. This is the kind of thing that's, if you want to lead into that ESPN main card, this is the one. Now I'm seeing Daniel Santos, Johnny Munoz. I don't trust anything anymore. Anyway, the whole schedule screwed up. But either way, I'll go with Malarkey Naimov. Naimov stepping on super short notice. One of two Tajikistan fighters. I was actually just listening to Jed talk about the Tajikistan parlay. I can't remember if he went through with it. Muin Gafarov also stepped in. You sure did. So on that level, it's very intriguing. But also, I expect this one to either end quickly, first round, someone just getting smoked, or early fight of the night candidate. It's pretty low in the prelims. I wonder if they put on a banger, will it be remembered by the end of the night? Because this card's probably going to be about 6 hours long. But I'm optimistic for both guys. Hopefully they walk out with an extra 50 G's each.
I will say, in defense of Alex Casera versus Daniel Pineda, that's probably the most likely to be the most fun non-main event fight on the card, I would say, right? Like, both those dudes are a lot of fun. Both of them are pretty wild. Alex Casera is on a little mini run here, super late in his career, 6-1 over the last seven. Pineda has like 3 no contests over his last 6 fights, which is very bizarre, and you rarely see that. But like, he's always here for a good time too. I don't know. I understand why that's the co-main event. I'll say that. No thoughts on the co-main event. All right, let's keep it going.
I thought you were going to elaborate. I thought you were going to elaborate on why this. I was trying to get off my mute.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most likely to be fun of the fights like on this card, frankly. So I get it.
Daniel Pineda always finishes, never wins by decision. Completely alien to him winning by decision.
Both dudes are pretty good grapplers, but also gets submitted like a lot. Like, it could be a really fun little scrap. Like, plus Alex, because like, it's the right nexus of fun and at least name value, because people know who Bruce Leroy is, whereas the only other person people have heard of on this are Jim Miller and Andrei Arlovsky, because, you know, heavyweight champion. Andrei Arlovsky,
which is crazy, because Caceres has, this is his 28th UFC appearance,
which means he needs to fight for another like 6 years to catch up. Andrei Arlovsky, who's a heavyweight and took like 6 years off the UFC to go do other shit. Give this man his due.
Or Jim Miller. But that's crazy that like we're saying like those are the two of them, because Alex Caceres should be a well-known guy. He's main evented fight nights before. And again, he's approaching 30 UFC appearances, but I think only, I don't think how many fighters have done that. Maybe like 20, if that. Maybe my number's too high. It almost feels like too high. But
nah, 20 feels like it's probably around right.
Okay. And he's about to join that club. And yet again, it's rarely a lot of pomp and circumstance around him. But hey, good for him. Penultimate fight, second last fight in the card. Sounds like I think someone's going to get a bonus out of this fight. I do think there's going to be a finish. So
seems
can't complain.
Likely.
Yeah, can't go wrong there.
Daniel Pineda on that prime Carlos Condit-ish with the 28 wins, 28 finishes. Like, come on. That's sensational. You got to love that. Also, if you combine, I would love someone in the comments, please do this while we talk, because I can't do math on the fly. But how many combined fights do you think Bruce Leroy, Andrei Arlovsky, and Jim Miller have in the UFC? Because that's got to be like, of the trios on any card ever, that's got to be some of the highest numbers for that.
Yeah. 110, I think, would be the number.
By definition, it has to be the most, because Arlovsky and Miller are 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So any other third and like another good third party, nobody, unless they already previously fought together on a card with Donald Cerrone, nothing's gonna be.
And by the way, I wish I had credit. Someone pointed this out. This is not what I thought of. A new record now. Jim Miller already had the record for the biggest discrepancy in UFC experience between him and his opponent when he fought, I think, Nicholas Mota. Am I crazy? Nicholas Mota had no.
He's been running through
here. Yeah, he's
debuting guys for a bit.
Yeah. Now this one, like, was different. Yeah, that was different because, like, I can't remember Moto Eric Gonzalez, but one of those, like, that was like booked, that was a standard 3 months booked ahead of time. This is like, now he's facing a guy who's coming in on literally 2 days' notice, Jesse Butler. But yes, now we have this is 42 UFC fights to 0 UFC fights. It almost sounds like it shouldn't be. Like, a responsible commission shouldn't, allow this. But again, we can talk more about the commission's behavior in a moment regarding Jim Miller's fight week.
They shouldn't, because you know what they should have done instead? We should have pulled Dontel Mays and just had Jim Miller fight Andrei Arlovsky.
Oh, if only.
Oh, now we're talking.
Talk about... Andrei probably wouldn't even really try to hurt him, so it could be fun. Just saying.
You accumulate a certain amount of UFC points or like UFC fights, and it goes into like a point system, almost like you're going to a restaurant, right? And so you're like,
yes,
and then you get to like 20 points and you get an open weight contest of your choosing.
Yep.
I love this. I love this idea so much. With spec rules, I feel like if you choose to go up, like Jim Miller gets to do an open weight contest against Andrei Arlovsky, but Arlovsky is not allowed to kick. Right, like he just doesn't get. You get to take away some of the weapons from him, and then we just see what happens.
Why aren't we doing this? Come on, let's write up the pitch. We'll send it to
Unfun Championship. That's what the UFC is.
Someone asked, and I don't know if we were going to pull up this question later, but someone asked what happened to Jared Gordon. And this is like, so obviously Jared Gordon was the first replacement opponent. This was a long time ago. It was Jim Miller versus Ludovic Klein. Ludovic Klein had to pull out, was replaced by Jared Gordon on short notice, who just fought at the end of April. And I'm sure we remember was knocked flat unconscious by a Bobby Green headbutt. And then there was punches after. It was headbutt and punches, right?
It wasn't nonsense. Oh yeah.
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 Not
I mean, he was going to lose anyway, though. He was going to lose sure, anyway. Sure. So I was really... gonna lose
him, but it's the clean knockout I want to focus on here. Was called upon on short notice to fight Jim Miller, which seemed like okay. We're like, hopefully he gets cleared. He talks about getting what he described as he said he had already recovered from a minor concussion. And this is on Wednesday. And not coincidentally, the commission said, like, oh, by the way, after media day, we discovered some things in his medical. Like, yeah, because he said it. Like, how did you guys not see this before? So Jared Gordon's out, Jesse Butler's in. You really have to question what they're doing with the testing or just even common sense. Did they not know he got knocked out 6 weeks ago?
They really were not paying attention.
What do you expect? Someone on the commission just like Wikipedia Jared Gordon and look at when he last fought? Come on, that's asking way too much,
that's
man.
So,
dude, like, they got 13 fights to deal with. They can't be in charge of all this. That's too difficult.
They're honestly putting on bangers after bangers. No bad events. That takes too much work.
Haven't had one. Honestly, when this all happened, my first thought was, do you guys remember last year when the Tua nonsense happened in Miami and he clearly got concussed and then put him back out there and it was like, oh good, we may have just seen the worst thing that's happened in professional football. Felt a lot like that, so I'm really glad that some adult was in the room eventually and was like, hey, we should super not do this because it's really, really bad.
All it took was Jared Gordon to snitch on himself.
Being honest. Answer your question. Being honest. If he hadn't said anything, Jared Gordon would be fine. He would have, I guess, passed whatever. I want to know what their test. I guess if it's.
Hey, you good?
I'm at a loss.
All right. Cool.
That's the test. That's the test.
That's bad. It's not good.
Also, just an incredible run of bad luck for Jared Gordon, who's sort of been an unlucky guy for like a lot of his UFC run. But just the last three of the robbery of the year with Patty. And then this Bobby Green thing where that was bad, like especially to suffer like such a bad knockout. And then this getting pulled from him last second, like guy can't catch a break, man. I feel for him.
There's always like a couple of guys who just are cursed for one reason or another. I need to go back and look and see if there's like a clear lineage of when one dude passed the torch and chart that.
Oh.
Because like Ian McCall was the most cursed. Ian McCall owned that belt for like 5 years. You know?
Oh, that was
Jared Gordon definitely has it right now. Yeah.
Nobody.
Do you think him? You think he has it or Alex Pereira's has it? Or Alex Perez has it?
I feel like Jared Gordon, but I maybe.
Alex Perez has
it. Alex Perez has a lot of gray on his Tapology page.
Yeah. that's not good.
I don't know, but I mean the robbery to Patty is doing a lot of heavy lifting in the curse category because it's not just about other. It's the whole totality of it. But I'm making a note. I'm going to do that for a feature.
I want to see the curse belt lineage for the lighter weight classes and the heavier weight class. It can be two because I feel like you got to diversify a little bit.
Okay, we'll work on this. Well, you know what? We'll workshop this later, Shaheen.
I believe
you guys are seeing the process right now.
The magic at work right here.
Producer Casey also wants us to mention that there are two elite XC vets on this card. I see that in the chat. Of course, the esteemed Mr. Arlovsky. And
let's get Casey in here.
Daniel Casey. Pineda.
Come on. Let's get some questions from the peeps.
Are we ready for some questions? All right. Questions.
I mean, I guess
that's it. There's like 40 other fights. You don't want to talk about all the fights?
Oh, we got to talk about at least.
What do you want to talk about, Casey? What's your second best fight on the card, Casey?
Probably the co-main event. You know, just because it's the fun fight. You know, the ultimate fun championships. That's what this is. So
ultimate.
Yeah. Ultimate. Yeah. You know, there's so many fighters on this card. I go, oh, are they new to the UFC? And then I look at their record. It's like, oh, they fought. I've watched four of their fights. And I just don't remember.
Dude, I mean? Forgot like, the Daniel. I forgot Daniel Pineda, like, has had two careers in the UFC. This dude fought Mike Thomas Brown in the UFC. Like, he's been around forever.
It's wild.
He fought Makan Semizier. I haven't thought about that name.
He was the original PFL drug test failure guy before it was cool. Before everyone started doing it this
before
year.
Before everyone did it.
He set the tone. He had a 29-second knockout of Movlid Habulayev, which now is off the record because he tested.
Which is an incredible the best feat. Win of his career. Easily the best.
The best win of anybody on the main card's career. The best win of any main card fighter right now.
Guys, that's a no contest.
Easily.
That's a no contest. You can't call the win. What are you doing? Come on. We get sued.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Easily it would have been the best win of his career.
That's crazy.
And then that's just goes down.
That's crazy.
One fight away from a milli. One fight away from a milli. That's rough. This one's
who
coming
ended
for
up fighting for that million. Now I need to look this up. Please continue.
Movlid won that year. I'm pretty sure Movlid won it. I'm pretty sure.
Could be, but I'll confirm while you continue with whatever's going on.
No, here. It wasn't. It wasn't.
How do you not have the PFL lineage?
Lance Palmer won the 2019.
Ah, that's where the Lance Palmer dynasty continued.
The dynasty.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, this first question is coming from our pal VJ, who says, who is the onus on in the Jared Gordon situation? I'd say the commission. I mean, what do you guys think?
The UFC.
The commission is there to stop the UFC from themselves, right?
Yeah, but why would the UFC
parties.
Yeah, I think it's equal. Well, the commission did their job. I don't understand. The commission did their job. The commission did.
They barely did their job.
The UFC did not do their job.
I mean, the UFC could have theoretically also made a last minute change as well. They are both to blame.
There's a lot going on. You got to book all these cards.
That everyone is just, they're all great.
Dude,
yeah.
Dude, I guarantee you, not because it wouldn't even be Dana who said it. Whoever was talking to him, Hunter or whatever, was just like, are you good? Yeah, I'm doing great. All right, cool. Well, if you want to do it, sure, let's go. That's how you be an effing fighter.
I mean, I get Jared Gordon is not like an A-list fighter, but like we know Jared Gordon. I mean, there's so many fighters I've seen four or five times and I barely remember. I remember Jared Gordon. I remember that situation with Bobby Green. It wasn't like some kind of forgotten fight. I don't understand how the UFC did this, honestly. I get the commission.
They just thought he was fine. Okay, he's fine. He said he's fine. What, am I going to call him a liar? He says he's okay. Let's do it.
Apologies.
It is, the commission. The commission is supposed to be the adult in the room.
I like operating a promotion under the, what am I going to call him a liar?
Call him a liar?
That's a real good philosophy.
I'm adopting that more in life. Just like, no, it's what he says. It's fine. Go with it.
Didn't you just have a bit about that on No Bets Barred? Something
I did.
Tim Elliott. Tim Elliott's like, I'm going to get a finish. And you're like, well, he's finishing. I'm going to call Tim Elliott a liar.
What do we know about Jim Miller's new opponent? Do we know anything? Other than his name.
Moving up in weight. Natural featherweight. Fights at featherweight.
He's on a decent run of victories. His name is Jesse.
He had a really nice knockout of UFC and Ultimate Fighter veteran Maciel Fullan February last year. You can find that clip out there. That's probably where most people might have heard of him before. Really nice, first round KO, 90 seconds. He's a finisher. People will like that. Again, he'll be a bit undersized.
Name.
Actually, not that much younger.
I'm looking at his Tapology, and the referee for his most recent fight against Luis Luna is named Birchie Stillwagoner.
No.
And that is a name. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a name. Kudos to your parents, sir. Birchie, B-I-R-C-H-I-E, Stillwagoner. I love that name. The name rules.
There are so many levels to that, and it's so good. The one person who I'm not putting responsibility on is Jared Gordon. If you're him, listen. I also saw something. I think this was going to be his first fight on a new contract, right? This is part of him getting a new contract. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone saw that.
Jared Gordon has been screwed out of two different paychecks over the last two fights. He is just trying to get some money at this point.
And who knows if the UFC paid him for this fight at all? So really, another paycheck because he's not even going to get a show money. That means he went through camp. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he has a day job or what too. I don't know how much he makes, but you know, it's a big commitment, you know, and his weight cut wasn't complete, but I'm sure he went through like 2 weeks of misery to even bring that weight down for no good reason. So, sucks to be him right now. But Jesse Butler though.
Let's say you raise actually a good point. I'll also throw some blame on Jared Gordon's coaches. Is again, somebody should have been like, hey, you should not do this. And clearly no one did.
It's so weird because say if the refs didn't overturn that fight with the with the headbutt thing and it was an L on his record, this fight would never have been booked. Like it's just a weird thing which happens all the time.
Also, how was he not like suspended? Like, how did he not get a commission?
Well, the thing is, you got to remember when they're doing, you know, you guys have seen, we write up when we can get them the medical suspensions. It's never for concussions. They don't suspend fighters medically. It's for broken bones, knee injuries, cuts, you know, very noticeable cuts.
They usually make you sick if you got knocked out, though.
When you get knocked out or go unconscious, usually there's a mandatory suspension that goes along with that. But also, none of that is actually hard and fast, though. They're like, those are just recommendations, more or less. And then, like, you can circumvent that really easily if you just go to a doctor and be like, hey, I'm good, right? Yeah, you're good. Okay, we're good. So, what are you going to call me a liar?
What are you going to call me a liar?
The best fight doctor ever. Like, I'm not going to call the fighter a liar. I mean, I'm not that guy.
It feels like a knockout. And I'm sure, listen, I'm not a neurologist. I'm sure there's different degrees of brain damage, of concussions. Well, newsflash, where's the breaking news? Where's the breaking news sound? I'm not a neurologist. I wish that if you got knocked out, that's like automatic 6 months. Like, I wish that's the way it was. Probably longer. Honestly,
if a human being knocks
another human. I always say this. I always say, like, not even fights that end in knockout, but like vicious, like three-round battles. Like, I think Gaethje Chandler, guys just murder each other. That's essentially like being in a car accident, right? That's probably about as damaging as being in a car accident, if not more.
It absolutely is, yes.
And then, as long as you clear,
it's got to be way worse.
But then, average car accident. Like, a lot of these guys were telling them, hey, 4 months later, 4 months later, 5 months later, sometimes 3 months later, do you want to get into a car accident again? Like that's crazy. Like that's I know we've come to accept this, but I'm speaking specifically to fights of where there's knockouts and just so much obvious concussive damage to the head. how can we be asking these guys to step back in so quickly? And in Gordon's case, 6 weeks after his last fight, it just makes zero sense. So everyone, a lot of people take responsibility, just not Jared Gordon. That's all I'll say.
You know, but it's fights like this where you get sometimes you get crazy knockouts, in the sense that I think of the Hernandez kid when he knocked out Benil. You know, mm-hmm. I think Hernandez was like a last week replacement.
Sure, too. This is Jesse Butler's moment. Listen, this is Jesse Butler's moment. All right, good for him. Good for him for being able to. He's a featherweight, so it wasn't that crazy to make 155. This is his moment. Imagine if he beats Jim Miller first UFC fight. Like, that would just be insane.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think who was so? There's like I can't think of names, but there's been a few fighters like that. They come in a week notice, wind up being a giant upset, and then we go, oh man, this guy's the next big thing. It just turns out
Ronda Venata almost. He's been riding, nearly beating Tony Ferguson for like 4 years. He didn't even beat him; just almost beat him, and we still talk about it. Run. We still talk about it to this day. I think he has it. Like, you know, it's crazy.
All right.
AK, I'm gonna just really quickly derail this because you mentioned Justin Gaethje in there, and I'm just gonna use this as a side road to be able to say something.
If you must.
Last night I stumbled upon maybe the most incredible thing I've ever stumbled upon, in an explanation of why the Gaethje Poirier rematch is the most perfect fight in the history of mixed martial arts. Just symmetry wise, those dudes fought in 2018, right? Here's what they've done both since 2018. Dustin Poirier, 6-2 since 2018, that fight with Justin Gaethje. He has 4 finishes, 2 decisions. He has a win over Michael Chandler. He has only losses and title bouts to Charles Oliveira and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Justin Gaethje, since 2018, fight against Dustin Poirier. 6-2, 4 finishes, 2 decisions, win over Michael Chandler, only losses, title bouts, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Charles Oliveira. They're the same person, AK. They're the exact same person. You could go even deeper. They both won interim titles since that first fight. They both won interim titles over fighters with 10-plus win streaks and angel wing tattoos on their backs. They both knocked down Charles Oliveira in their title fight and then got subbed out with a rear naked choke. They are the exact same fighter, and it is ridiculous. It's blowing my mind. There are so many levels to it. I love it.
Absolutely. I saw that. I saw you having this discussion on social media the other day, and the 10 fight win streak thing really blew my mind for some reason, because I don't know why. I couldn't remember.
The angel wings blew my mind thing. That one.
That's just freaky. That's just freaky. But yeah, I forgot that Holloway obviously was on a 10 fight win streak at featherweight, but yeah, was on a 10 fight win streak and also lost to Poirier. So that's wild.
We are clearly all living in a simulation.
Lightweight's not a bad division. What else is going on? Lightweight's not a bad division. I don't know if you guys don't talk about it enough. It's a good division. Good.
Last thing on
that's a hot take.
The Jesse Butler Miller fight. Because I think this is interesting too for fans that don't understand.
Oh,
is Jesse? Brandon says, is Jesse in the USADA pool? Does the UFC has prospects they call up in the USADA, or they plan to call up in the USADA pool? No, I mean, this is the exception, right? This is just
it's in there.
Somebody, we're just going to grant you the exception.
He could pop for something. He could pop super hot in a couple of weeks, and you would not be surprised at all, because no, he is obviously taking it 2 days. There's no way they can give him a comprehensive proper USADA testing. So
they basically just allow any debutante to not be in it. That's fine.
Walk right in.
Drug testing's a joke and nonsense anyway. Yeah. So whatever.
Gafarov, one of the other guys, Muin Gafarov, is on 8 days notice. I doubt he's fully tested.
I think I know the answer, but like, explain the difference between the McGregor situation and the Jesse Butler situation, as far as USADA and testing.
Well, Conor McGregor isn't a UFC rookie. And they're not tabbing him to come in on 2 days' notice. So is that the difference?
There's not a difference, but practically there is.
So it's basically, you saw, if you're under contract, then you can just, you don't have to have their requirement thing or whatever. Because
if you are new to the promotion, there are exceptions granted to you. But if you were just in the promotion and you just decided to pull yourself out of the USADA pool conveniently and take a long break, they're not going to give you that.
I mean, they can.
Or the UFC. No,
I mean,
the UFC.
Yeah,
the UFC gets to dictate. They can do whatever the hell they want. They pay USADA. USADA has no influence or determining factor over UFC. They pay their bills. So, like, what are they going to do? No, it goes against our principles to let Conor fight next week. Suck it. If you want $100 million a year, you're going to shut the hell up and clear this dude. Like, they don't give a shit.
No. USADA is not a quote-unquote governing body like the commission is, right?
They're a company.
They're just a company. They're literally just a company.
It's a drug test company that the UFC treats as gospel, except for, you know, that one time that they really needed Brock to headline 200. And they were like, well, don't care about these principles we have.
Yeah. I think I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, we're hitting an hour here. Let's hit maybe one or two more and we'll get out of here.
No problem. Did we mention this? Sorry. Let's go back to the main event.
Joseph Boza could a flyweight title shot be on the line in the main event? Yeah, I mean, we hit that pretty extensively. I think for Albazi, possibly. For KKF, probably not.
When is the pay-per-view in Australia? When is that?
September is the target, I think.
September.
I want to say that September is the target for that one.
And Moreno and Pantoja are fighting.
It is September 10th. Moreno and Pantoja are fighting International Fight Week, right?
Early July.
290, yeah, July.
So I'm just
if Pantoja wins, then I could see it. I don't think they're running back Moreno KKF, even unless KKF like literally uppercuts Albazi out of the cage, Francis Ngannou, Alistair Overeem style. I don't think he's getting a title fight against Moreno. Different story if he does really well and, you know, Ali Pants gets it done.
Yeah. All right. And see, all right, I got any more questions. Here we go. Last question.
Again, this one's coming from Joseph. How is Ketlin Souza as a fighter? She's debuting Saturday versus Karin Silva.
Pretty mid. Pretty mid. She's a fighter. She is the almost textbook definition, as far as I'm concerned, of like mid-level women's flyweight. She can kind of do some stuff, but she's not like super athletic. She's not like super dangerous. I was stunned to see that she has a Wikipedia page because
Invicta champ.
I mean, I guess that's true, but
she was a
champ, I don't know.
Invicta? Really?
She was.
She just won it.
Just
won it
a few months ago.
Yeah.
Won it.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, she's kind of do some stuff. I think she's probably going to lose to Silva, who's just a more dynamic, powerful, dangerous fighter. But she's also kind of young too. I think she's only like 25, something like that. So she can grow. Yeah. She's 27. Okay. She still has room to kind of develop and grow, but she's nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
Silva, Karina Silva's kind of the A side here. I think people kind of view her as more of the sort of higher upside, somewhat more, I would say more exciting, I guess, more compelling. She's like Pineda. She just finishes all of her fights, which, that's again, some of the lighter weight classes, some of the lighter women's weight classes. Listen, it's not that common. It's not that common. You find someone who's putting away, someone with the frequency that Karina Silva does. But I don't think Silva, I'm not counting her out at all. Like, it sounds like we're kind of like counting her out. Cause I do think, you know, winning the Invicta championship means something. It was over against another somewhat kind of, you know, middle of the road talent in, Christina Williams, but it did mean something. Five rounds. She had, you know, five good rounds. But I personally, I'm obviously thinking this is going to be, more of a showcase for Karina Silva, which is why I imagine this fight was put together. But hey, Ketlin, prove us wrong. Have us eating our words on the post fight show.
And last question, I know the answer to this because Jed talked about it a lot on BTL, but I think it needs to be brought up again.
Oh, I was about to bring this up, so I'm glad you came. Seattle Ryan, closing us out here. What is the best bet to make tomorrow? I mean, first of all, Seattle Ryan, go listen to No Best Bard. It's a pretty great program on a pretty great podcast.
Great podcast.
But just a little sneak peek, Jed, what's your number one bet this week?
Oh, my number one bet this week. Just because we haven't talked about it at all, we're going to go with, I'm taking Tim Elliott inside the distance at like plus 400. Because Tim,
what are you going to call the man a liar?
What am I going to call a man a liar? Exactly. Like, and plus you got to think about it too, right? Like my exact argument on OS Bard was, 2 weeks ago, we saw Mackenzie Dern come out and beat the brakes out of Angela Hill. Angela Hill's just real tough. But afterwards, she was like, yeah, my personal life was kind of shit and in turmoil, and it took that out on Angela Hill. What am I going to call Tim Elliott a liar? We saying that his personal life isn't doing too hot right now either. Pretty tough couple of, like, 18 months for him. So I think Victor Altamirano's in trouble tomorrow. And I think he's going to get a finish.
He called the finish, right?
I don't know if he called the finish, but he is, he said that he was going to do some like quote unquote crazy shit. So I think he's going to get real wild in there. And so it should be fun as hell. And, it's probably not the best bet, but it's going to be a fun bet. And you got to support Tim Elliott, you know, given his rough ride lately.
Any overs right. Anyone should bet on?
Oh, yeah. Heavyweight.
Orlovsky, Mays. Orlovsky, Dontel Mays.
High care of Francis Miral Bazzi under 2.5, or actually 3.5 is the line on it. So.
Oh, it's 3.5 now? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's 3.5. There you go. There's your no NBB preview. Boom. Now go with the rest preview of the podcast, or Jed's coming to your house. Anyway, that's the UFC Vegas 74 preview show. I appreciate y'all for hanging out with us here on this wonderful Friday morning. Again, Doc Rivers is not the coach of the Phoenix Suns. All is right in the world. It is just a beautiful, beautiful day.
Ooh, as we outro, is Miami going to win a game? Because they got rinsed yesterday.
Game three.
Nugs in five. The dominance of
the
this
notorious Miami run, home game?
There'll be one game where they hit an inordinate amount of three-pointers, and then they'll win that way. That's about it.
I feel infinitely better about stealing two from this Denver team now than I did like a month ago, because they're clearly, this is a
dude. So somebody should just straight up Tanya Harding Jokic. Like, okay. What are you going to do now?
All right. I think every time.
Shut it down.
You're not able to amount enough power to do anything to that man. Have you seen how gigantic he is? He is so sneaky huge, and his brothers are terrifying. You do something.
I love
his
him
brothers
so
are
much.
Capturing you and taking you to Serbia.
Jokic looks like a dude who says that he could have gone pro if he hadn't hurt his knee in high school, except he's actually the best player in the world. It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. But yeah, this is UFC Vegas 74 preview show. Enjoy the fights, everyone. We love you.
Love y'all.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out, not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year, and hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Yeah. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.